Hello, everybody. Hello, and welcome to Honey Badger Radio. My name is Brian. I'm here with Mike J, and this is the Nerdcast, where we talk about the week in geek. And today's show is going to be a bit of a special one, because there's only one thing to talk about that I think would be the most fun to talk about, and that is going to be this little movie that came out over the weekend that you may have heard of called Avengers Endgame. Now, I know that aside from Avengers Endgame, the thing that's on everybody else's mouths that didn't watch that is about the newest season of Game of Thrones. Unfortunately, I don't watch that show, so I have nothing that I can possibly say to it. But maybe, I think, Mike J, you watch Game of Thrones, right?
Indeed, I do.
Okay, well, maybe we can do something about that. I thought we could probably talk about it once the season is over, because then it's
that'd probably be the best.
Yeah, because then it'd be like the whole... You could talk about the whole show, and maybe I can get Anna Cherry on, because I know she's a big fan, and you guys can like geek out on that. I've stopped after the first season, and I don't have any HBO stuff, so I wasn't into it. So, but with that said, the one thing, I think this is actually one of the few times that you and I can both talk about something that we've both experienced, as opposed to in the past. And be like, oh, tell us about the Telltale games and I'll talk about a game that I played or something like that. This is actually something we both watched. So I guess before we get into it, I want to give you guys a warning. We can't talk about this movie without spoiling it. I don't see how you can possibly do it. Or at the very least, I don't see how you can hold a conversation that goes longer than 10 minutes without spoiling the movie. So if you don't want Avengers Endgame spoiled for you, you probably should not watch this episode, but be sure to instead maybe go watch one of our older Nerdcasts where we talked about other stuff. But yeah, probably don't watch this until you've seen it, unless either you've already seen the movie, which based on the sales numbers, I'm guessing that a lot of you guys probably did, or unless you don't care about spoilers, because for some people, spoilers don't really mean much. Aside from the fact that I don't see how you've been able to be on the internet for this long and you haven't been spoiled on this movie in some level. Like, even though I tried to avoid it, I think I got one thing was spoiled before I got to see the movie, but it wasn't a big thing. Did you experience any spoilers before you saw
it? I flat out found out Iron Man was gonna die.
Oh my god.
Yeah, I was pretty pissed.
Spoilers, by the way.
Wait, we said it at the start, man.
What about the part where the Ninja Turtles came out? And did anyone talk about that? I'm just kidding. There's no Ninja Turtles. Although that would have been freaking cool. As long as it wasn't the Ninja Turtles from the last couple movies, those are awful. Yeah. So you flat out found out about Iron Man.
Yeah, and it really wasn't that big of a thing. I thought he was actually going to die a lot sooner in the movie. It was going to be a shock. I didn't know they were going to save it towards the very end, which I think made it better in a way.
Oh yeah. I kind of saw that coming, honestly, but we'll get into one. I saw it coming. I figured it was almost the only way this could go. And so I was happy when that happened, personally.
I would have realized it the second that he was talking with Strange in the final battle, and he's like, oh yeah, I can't tell you how this goes or else it ain't gonna go. And then Iron Man, I think even Iron Man at that moment, he's like, yeah, I'm gonna die.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, all right. So before we get into this movie, we should probably qualify this discussion. I am an enormous Marvel Comics fan. When I was a kid, I used to read the books, and I watched every single movie in the MCU, that's official MCU stuff, from on the first weekend, with one exception, and that was Captain Marvel, which I didn't watch, but I watched everything else. So I have, and I bought all of them on Blu-ray when they were available. Again, with the exception of Captain Marvel, because it's not on Blu-ray, obviously, but I don't think I'll probably pass on it anyway. But everything else I was all about. So I have seen all the films. So have you seen all the films too, or
roughly? There are bits and pieces. Like, I didn't see Captain Marvel. I didn't see Black Panther. I watched the synopsis of it. Shout outs to Mahler. Love that.
Yeah.
I didn't see Thor the Dark World, just because I heard from multiple sources that it really, A, wasn't the best, and B, wasn't really necessary to understand what was going on. But aside from that, I think I pretty much saw everything else.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, well, I actually, Thor the Dark World was relevant to this movie, interestingly enough. So, okay, so I guess let's get into, how do we want to do this? Maybe we'll talk about the general impressions of the film. So I personally thought it was great. I thought it was a great movie. I thought the Russos did a really amazing job. I thought most of the performances were, you know, on point. I liked the story in terms of the plot, and I thought it was a really great movie that could have been better, but for what we have, I thought they did well. And I have a theory as to why that is. I think the Russos normally knock it out of the park. Now, the Russo brothers have directed a couple of other films in the MCU specifically. They did Captain America Winter Soldier was their first one, which was amazing. They did Captain America Civil War and was also amazing. And then they got to do Infinity War. And some people say, you know, different people have favorites. But in general, most people who have a favorite from the MCU, it's probably one of the Russo's movies. For most people, I think for my wife, for Lindsay, I think it might be Guardians. But I mean, those are great movies, too, the Guardians movies. But anyway, but with this film, which is their fourth in the MCU, I think this is their weakest one. But I still think it's a really good movie. I personally believe, though, that there was some studio interference. There was some influence that was kind of like over them, that was making them do little things that ended up being kind of annoying, but they weren't like deal breakers, but they really stand out as kind of not really in line with how the Russos normally do their movies. And to a degree, there's a lot of studio, you could say that there's studio influence on every film because, you know, Kevin Feige, he basically says, he's the guy who says, okay, you have freedom to do what you want in this film. However, this is how it has to fit into the larger narrative. And this is one of the things that made guys like Edgar Wright, who was supposed to be directing Ant-Man originally, he ended up walking away from the project because he wanted complete autonomy. And what Kevin Feige wanted was something that was going to fit within the larger overarching story of the MCU. He's kind of like when Stan Lee was editor-in-chief back in the day, you know, writers and artists could do whatever they want, whatever they wanted with their comics, but Stan was the one that kept everything kind of coherent or cohesive within the larger universe. So he would say, oh yeah, you can do whatever you want with this X-Men story, but you can't have this character in it because this character is currently in this comic doing this other thing. So he was the guy who kept everything lined up. So you people had freedom, but within, you know, some boundaries. And I think that is what happened with the Russos. That's just my thoughts on that. But we'll get into, I guess, what my issues were. But for the most part, I would say overall, I thought it was actually a great movie that isn't perfect, but could have been. So what do you think?
My take's a lot like yours. Mm-hmm. Maybe a little bit more positive. Mm-hmm. The way you say that, you know, it could have been better. I look at the flip side of that coin and say the way it could have been better is a lot smaller than the way it really, really could have been worse. Like I said to you before the show, if I had to sum things up in one word, it would be relief.
Mm-hmm.
I was sitting there in the theater for all 3 hours waiting for the one scene, the one part, the one whatever that was going to do irreparable damage and just ruin the movie for me.
Yeah.
But when we finally got to the credits, that scene never came. And I was like, oh good, sigh of relief. I'm good. I did not waste over a decade of investment getting getting involved in this whole story.
Yeah.
And just to end up holding the bag on the other side.
Yeah, I can see that because, there, you know, the hype around the movie, especially the press hype, especially when Captain Marvel came out in theaters, there were people that were very worried that was going to ruin the movie. Like that Captain Marvel was just going to show up and Deus Ex Vagina the whole thing and just take all of the, just suck all the fun out of it. And if you were worried about that, I have good news. There is very little Captain Marvel in the movie.
That was very the best little. Part. Oh, the best part of the movie when she's like, "Kay, I got to go do some other stuff. I'm going to be gone a while."
Yeah, yeah. And they were like, "Why?" And actually, you know, Lindsay said it doesn't make a lot of sense that she wouldn't be, but they had to keep her out of the movie. But logically, it doesn't make sense that she wouldn't be involved because
they've shown her to be this basically a god.
Yes. No, I know. So like keeping her there would have made the movie boring. But the logic in the story for keeping her out doesn't make a lot of sense because she says, "Well, I have like thousands of planets that I need to guard, right?" But the thing is that Thanos is going to use Infinity Stones to wipe out half the population in the entire universe. So Thanos is a problem for Captain Marvel. It like regardless, because what he does will affect all the planets that she's supposed to protect. But that is by the logic of what they did in the story. But I know that what the writers were trying to do was to find a way to keep her away from this story because they made her too fucking broken a character.
Yeah. And you know what? Masterfully done. I'm glad they did
it. I mean, I'm glad they did it, but it doesn't make sense. Like if you really think about it it doesn't make sense. It's like, "Well, I'm sorry, I can't help you find all the Infinity Stones so that you can save half the population of the universe, but I have to protect these planets over here." And it's like, okay, well, good, because we don't want you here ruining this movie, but that doesn't make sense. Like, maybe what they should have done is not made Captain Marvel a god. Maybe that's what they should have done, but they didn't. I mean, they literally, character...
that ship has sailed.
No, that ship has sailed when they made that movie, because the character in the comics is nothing like that in terms of, like, her power. It's not even close to Thor. It's not, but can't have that because my girl power, I guess. But nonetheless, like I said, even if it doesn't make sense in terms of the plot of the movie, you'll be relieved to know that there isn't much Captain Marvel. She shows up a little in the beginning.
It's a glorified plot device.
Yes, she shows up there is a little bit of Deus Ex, Carol. Yeah. In fact, she... Yeah. Rescues Tony Stark from outer space in the beginning.
I was thinking about this last night. Did we ever figure out how they figured out where Tony was?
How did they figure out where? I think, because this is the thing, like, I don't know how she found them, but I think, and I could be wrong here, that it has something to do with the post-credit scene in Captain Marvel, where she answers the pager. And that's the only thing I could think of. And then after that, she must have found a way to track Tony's ship because she shows up and gets the ship and takes him and Nebula back to Earth, which considering that Captain Marvel can fly faster than the speed of light and all this shit, it makes sense that she would be able to do that. But I don't know how she found them, but I was like, well, we need to get Tony to Earth. And maybe that's a little bit of a cop-out. There's definitely, again, like you were saying before the show, there's stuff you could nitpick, but for the most part, I'm willing to let those things go because the movie's 3 hours and, you know, we got to get moving. We got to get to like the, you know, to, I guess, you know, to start the story. So we got to get Tony back to Earth somehow. So that's sort of like how they do it. So yeah, Captain Marvel shows up to save him. And then there, you don't see her for a little while. Then there's like a 5-year jump forward. Then you see her again, like on a hologram screen talking to Black Widow.
She's going
to
be gone for the rest of the movie.
Announcing that she's not going to be around for the rest of the movie with like a new sort of Hillary Clinton haircut. And then you don't see her again till the very, very end in the final battle. Which has a bit of cringe in it, but it's not enough to detract from any of the other stuff in the experience. You just get, you know what it is? It's like you can tell where there's stuff happening that doesn't fit, like the stuff that with Captain Marvel doesn't fit with the vision of everything else. Like everything else feels really natural and it makes sense. And then when the bits with Captain Marvel, they feel off, like it was added on. And I don't know, like it's just like something completely alien. I don't know if you understand what I'm saying. But
I understand. I get where you're coming from. That there was a couple of instances where it's like, no, this doesn't feel right. This is something that somebody else had to have put in here. If they had their way, this would not be in here.
Exactly. You know what? When I think of it, when I was watching the movie, there are moments throughout. Most of them involving Carol or like other kind of, you know, female characters, not always because Black Widow was awesome, but in some cases where I just immediately had this in my head popped a dancing Peter Parker from Spider-Man 3. Like I just had, because Spider-Man 3, for those of you guys who know, Spider-Man 3 is the product of the studio getting involved with the director and making them, forcing them to do stuff they didn't want to do. That's why Spider-Man 3 was so weird and disjointed and phoned in, because originally Sam Raimi, he didn't want to do a movie with Venom at all. He didn't like the Venom character. He was a very old school Spider-Man fan. So he only wanted to see villains that were the Spider-Man classic villains from his classic rogues gallery. And I remember that him saying that in an interview where they were like, oh, you know, when are you going to put Venom in there? And he was like, I'm not really, I don't think of Venom as a classic Spider-Man villain. I'm not going to do that. And then suddenly that was after Spider-Man 2. And then suddenly there was Spider-Man 3 and Venom was in it. And it was like, oh, I thought he was against this. And then it turned out the movie was crap. Like he had Green Goblin set up. He had Sandman. But then there was this other character that, you know, and then the whole thing was just strange. And I think the studio was trying to get him to do something he didn't want to do. So he decided he's just going to take a dump on the franchise. And I don't think the Russos would have reacted that way. But there are certainly parts of the movie, small parts, not a lot. Most of it is amazing. But there are definitely small moments that feel phoned in. And they are the ones that have, let's say that they scream diversity in them. So, and like there's like this forced kind of, you know, narrative in it. But if you could, like, it's also like, you know, I have some issues with the pacing and editing. Like there are scenes that go on for longer than I think they needed to. And then there are other scenes that I think needed more in order to like, make them feel more natural, like that I thought got rushed. So I'll give you an example. Okay, so Ant-Man comes back because a rat happens to step on a button that lets him out of the machine that he got sucked into. What were we going to say about that?
No, I'm just saying, yes, that was definitely one of those scenes that could have been handled a little bit better, or something other than a rat running over a machine could have started that.
Yeah, that could have been thought out a little bit better. I think that they wanted to... they just really wanted to like get him out of the machine. And so that's the way they did it. But I thought it's not just that though. Like go ahead.
It should have been his Mexican buddy finding him.
Yes. It should have been
his Ant-Man. Yes. And he's like, how long have I been gone? He's like, 5 years. Like, what's happened?
Yes.
And then he starts explaining the entire thing that happened and the way he explains it in the Ant-Man.
That would have been perfect. That's what I'm talking about. If they had gone that way, that would have been a much better way, is to do a callback to his Hispanic friend, that the way that he explains things, that would have been perfect. Crazy, stupid, fine. And so they did that. And then right after Ant-Man comes back, he goes to visit his daughter, who's older. So this is all good stuff. And then we cut to Avengers Mansion, and Ant-Man just goes there with his time travel theory. So and I thought that was a bit rushed, because he goes from, I'm just glad to be with my daughter again, to, oh, I know how to fix everything. We'll use time travel. It kind of jumps
in. Yeah, and then they invent time travel in literally 10 minutes.
Yes, and then they go to Tony Stark, and he figures it out in an evening. And again, it's like, I know that he's smart, but guys, like, we gotta, you know, that could have been paced out a little bit better. I think that they rushed it. And then, like, instead, the one of the scenes that kind of drags on is this bit where, and I understand why, I just think it could have been a little bit more efficient. There's a scene before that. It's after 5 years after the snap, and people are trying to go back to living a normal life. And Captain America is now doing the thing that Falcon used to do, which is running these sort of therapy sessions, these group therapy sessions. And there's a guy who's actually one of the Russos who always cameos in these movies, who's like going on about this date that he had that he went on with another guy. And it's basically like create some LGBT representation. I am not kidding. People have actually talked about it. I'm putting it on the screen. This is the Mary Sue. Let's talk about the LGBTQ representation in Avengers Endgame. So they actually were unhappy with it because they thought it was shoehorned in, even though this is what the Mary Sue wants. And maybe it was. I don't know. But I will tell you that I thought it was, it went on for a little bit too long in order to I think the point being that people are not adjusting or adapting to this new sort of post, you could say, cataclysmic event of half of the people on Earth dying. But it was poorly paced. I think that that could have been shorter, but you could have still communicated the idea, even with the gay relationship. I don't care about that. But I think that focusing on it is why it got dragged out, because they were like, well, we got to do this. And there was probably people saying, we need some LGBTQ stuff in here. And they were like, okay, we'll put a scene in like this, right? And I just, again, it just, there's something weird about it. It goes on for too long and it slows things down and it doesn't fit. And instead of a scene like that, we could have spent more time with the plot, with either Tony figuring out time travel, or maybe, you know, with I think his name was Luis, was Ant-Man's friend, you know, finding him or something. But they could have done it in a way that's more relevant to the plot instead of just doing this. And I thought, again, these are nitpicks. Like, this doesn't kill the movie at all. But these are issues that, you know, you can point to and say, oh, they could have handled that a little bit better. So
yeah, again, it was one of those scenes that I sat there and like, boy, we got to do this.
Mm-hmm.
But it passed relatively quickly, and it's like, okay, all right, done, moving on.
Well, yeah, in the larger, when you look at the big picture of 3 hours, it's probably like a five or 6 minute scene. But, you know, again, we could have, I think that the time could have been better spent on other stuff, but those are just little nitpicks. What about how they handled time travel itself?
That was a mess.
Really?
I knew they were going to, I knew they were going to go that route, because there are just only so many ways that they could kind of reverse what they did.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, it's going to have to be time travel. I don't see any other way this is possible. And yeah, it was kind of a mess how they explained everything. I am glad they didn't overthink it as much as they could have, and it could have soaked up even more time. It was more like, okay, we kind of got a plan. Let's put it into action. We'll figure out the details later. And it kind of seems like they were just flying by the seat of their pants on that one, but I still think it worked.
You know, I actually liked the time. Okay, let me put it this way. When the idea that they were going for time travel, I guess I can't think of another way to do it. So I think that in that regard, it makes sense. But the way that they actually treated time travel, I actually didn't like it at first, but I get it now. And I think it makes it opens up more possibilities, and it also makes it easier for them to write it without paradoxes, because I think in this version of the way that they're handling time travel, I don't think paradoxes are necessarily possible, like in the way that things ended.
They straight up say like, oh, well, it's not a thing of like, okay, you're going to go back to this and this timeline is going to be different. No, it's not that that it's that you create literally two different branches.
Yeah.
So there's as opposed to infinite possibilities.
Yeah. As opposed to like what you could say is it basically is more of a quantum physics type of time travel where when you change something, you create a new timeline that branches out and it basically starts a new reality or an alternate dimension. It's the idea of infinite alternate universes where different things have happened at different points in time. And you're going to those points and changing them. But as long as you go back and change it at that same point, it'll put things back on track. At least that's the theory
of
the movie.
And that's where things start to get a little fucky. But
mm-hmm.
That's the point where I just kind of threw up my hands and said, oh, okay, whatever film. All right. If you say it works that way, it works that way. I am willing to suspend my disbelief one further notch just to have fun with this.
Yeah. Yeah, I get behind that. I like the way they handle it. I dug a couple of little. So what they do is, for those of you who don't know, and you're here for the spoilers, I guess. So what they're trying to do is they're trying to go back in time to get the Infinity Stones before they before Thanos gets them, and they only have so much of the Pym particles, which is what they use to travel in time. This is after Tony Stark figures out time travel and all that. And by the way, after he agrees to go with them, that was another thing they kind of brushed over that I thought deserved more time was Tony's reuniting with Steve. You know, Captain America and Iron Man had a falling out in Civil War. And you thought, well, this is, you know, some deep wounds and all that. But when they get back together, there's a little bit of tension, but they get over it pretty quick. And I'm kind of like, well, that wasn't addressed as well as I would hope, you know, like you want a little bit more closure or whatever, but whatever. So they're going to go back in time to retrieve the Infinity Stones from various points in time before Thanos does, so they can build a new gauntlet and then return, bring everybody back to life that was killed by the snap. And then, you know, everything will be cool. So at one point on Earth, there were three Infinity Stones in the same place in New York City at the same time. So, and it's cool because they do a good job in not messing that up, because it's true. There was the Tesseract and the Scepter. So that's the Mind Stone and the Space Stone and the Time Stone, because even though Doctor Strange wasn't the Sorcerer yet, the Ancient One was on Earth in New York with the Time Stone. And so when they go back to New York 2014, basically during the events of the first Avengers movie, they did this cool thing where they're on Earth during the first movie and you get to see stuff going on kind of parallel. So if you watch the first Avengers movie, they go back to that point and you can see the other Avengers, like from 2014, fighting against the alien invasion and Loki and stuff. But these Avengers that get sent back in time are kind of like coexisting. So like Cap is there and Iron Man is there and so on.
I got to wonder, because they did a couple of things. They showed a couple of scenes from different perspectives.
Yeah.
I have to wonder, did they know that this is how things were going to shake out? So they filmed these things from different perspectives?
Oh, I doubt it.
Or did they have to like...
I think they had to reconstruct some bits, and they probably had to go into... because they have all the footage, you know, like maybe the pre-production stuff from the first movie. So they could go into the first movie shots and, you know, maybe change some things. Or maybe they did have shots from multiple angles, but they didn't actually have it planned necessarily to do this with it. But they just had it in case they wanted to do, you know, a certain shot from a different angle. I'm not really sure. But I doubt that. I doubt that they were prepared for that. So, but yes, they saw their younger selves, and it was kind of cool that, you know, like the Hulk had to go and convince the Ancient One to give up his stone. And she kind of explains why, you know, this is a problem. And that's when he makes the promise to return them. Meanwhile, some hijinks ensue, and it's all fun stuff. I like how they did that. Then there's what else did they? Oh yeah, so the reference to Ragnarok, they actually did reference Ragnarok because the Dark World. So Thor: The Dark World was about the ether, at the center, which was another stone. And the Dark Elves were getting it, and they had it injected into Natalie Portman. And Thor and I think it was Rocket, they had to go to the events of the Dark World to try to get it, to get the stone from Natalie Portman. And so they did, again, I think Natalie Portman was actually in the movie. And I believe that she had there was an issue with her at the studio or something, and that's why she wasn't in any more of those movies. Like, they weren't paying her enough, or she didn't like her role or something like that. But she was in this movie. There was some people they brought back for just to be in this movie, even with small parts. I mean, I think that Portman literally, I think she had no lines, or maybe she had one. And either that or they used footage from the Dark World, but I don't think that's the case. So,
yeah, I mean, I don't recall her saying. I think there's this part where she's walking with a bunch of other women and maybe she's like murmuring something. But yeah, I don't think she had any like actual.
Yeah. Well, anyway, maybe because we're already at the halfway point, maybe we should talk about how we like the way they handle the characters, because I think this is where I'm going to have some complaints. So we'll start with how do you feel about how they handled. I'm just going to talk about the major characters, because there's lots of characters in this fucking movie. But what do you think about how they handled Hawkeye?
I liked that he had a sort of more darker shift, that he coped with the you know, the end of the world. Well, not really the end of the world, but
the end of his family.
The cataclysm, yeah. By just turning into basically the Punisher.
Yeah. Yeah. Hawkeye had more, he had more in this movie, although I don't know what was up with that haircut.
Yeah, the haircut was
pretty bad.
Odd.
but otherwise, yeah, they gave him more to do, and actually I think he had more screen time and development than he has in most of the previous films.
The beginning scene with him was really a gut punch.
Yeah.
Like, you end up feeling so bad for the guy.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, Jeremy Renner is a good actor too. I mean, I saw him in stuff before, you know, he got this kind of role, and I think this was actually like taking advantage of some of his like acting chops. And he's actually a very cool dude from what I've seen in interviews. He's like one of those guys that's instantly likable. You know, when you see how he interviews, he's not full of himself.
Very unpretentious.
Yes, he's very unpretentious. He's not full of himself. He seems pretty cool. So, what about Black Widow?
She was kind of the same as she usually is.
Mm-hmm.
I did like that they kind of peeled away one little layer in that one scene where you can tell she's kind of struggling to hold it together.
Yeah. Hold it together.
So they kind of like expose, like, oh, there's a actual human being under all that.
Yeah. Considering, like, again, like, you know, Scarlett Johansson's acting range, which, I mean, she's competent. You know, she's fine as far as an actress goes. But I like the character of Black Widow. And I will say that I thought she was great in this movie. In that, I like what they did with her in terms of like how they get the Soul Stone. So Black Widow makes a sacrifice, and when we were seeing this, I thought this is the only way that this could go. When I saw that, you know, they had to send two people to Vormir, which is the planet where the Soul Stone and Red Skull happened to be hanging out. And when they went to Vormir in Infinity War, you might know that Thanos had to throw Gamora to sacrifice her to get the Soul Stone so that he could use it, right? So when they go to Vormir before Thanos does, somebody has to make a sacrifice. But the two people who go are Hawkeye and Black Widow. Fortunately, they two people that really care about each other as friends. And
also, fortunately, the two most disposable Avengers.
Yeah, the two of the most disposable Avengers, or at least the two that, you know, could probably die by the end of the second act, I think is around that time that happened.
We were talking in the chat the other day. It was like imagine if they'd sent like Thor and Captain America.
Yeah. Yeah, but
it's like I could just see like Thor volunteering to do it, and then you know after a minute he hits, and Iron Man looks or Captain America looks over. He's like, "Oh, yeah, you're still alive. That probably won't kill you. We're gonna need to hire."
Yeah. Aside from the fact that maybe that you know they aren't they don't love each other that much, so yeah, it may not actually work out. Yeah, the bromance isn't that much. But they did. This is why I liked it. When I saw that they were both going, I thought, okay, normally in films like this, where there has to be a sacrifice made, women are not normally written to do that. And so I was surprised that they were going that route, but I was very glad that she, and it wasn't because Hawkeye wanted her to, or she wanted to. They were both fighting over who gets to do it, which shows you just to the degree to which that they were willing to take these risks. And I thought that is heroic behavior. And that Black Widow ended up doing it, I thought was, you know, I thought it was awesome. I was really glad that she did that. I mean, I think it's a good arc for the character because I was like, it makes sense. Like Hawkeye has a family. Black Widow can't have a family. Black Widow actually has the reason why she was in S.H.I.E.L.D. and did the work that she did was because she was trying to essentially alleviate herself from guilt that she felt from being an assassin for the what does she call it the for the communists basically right for yeah. for the Russians. So she was trying to essentially what did she call it? I have read in my ledger. That was the whole thing where she was trying to remove guilt. And so she self-sacrificed to do it, to atone. And I thought, you know, I can really admire that. I thought that was very cool that they got her to do it because it made the most sense. That is, I think, heroic behavior. And that is the model by which if people want to write stories about diverse heroes, they have to act like heroes. And what Black Widow did is act like a hero, you know? And I gotta say that I loved that. I mean, somebody had to do it.
It was well done scene.
Yes, it was well done, in my opinion. I got a couple super chats I should probably read out here. So the DCV Titan gives us $10 Canadian and says, the only thing that stood out negatively to me was when Peter handed the gauntlet over to Carol and it was Vajayjay assemble. That seemed like a warning sign of things to come. Yeah, you know, my eyeballs rolled so far back in my head that I was able to see out of my colon, but I don't think it ruined the movie at all. It was just... So what the DCV Titan is referring to is there is a moment during the final battle where all of the women come together, all the female superheroes, like even fucking Pepper Potts has power armor at this point. So it's like Pepper and Valkyrie and Scarlet Witch and every female hero with the exception of Black Widow because she's dead. She's gone. But all the rest and Captain Marvel, they all come together because Spider-Man gets overwhelmed, which is fine. He's, you know, Spider-Man. That would happen. And they all team up to basically help. I think they're helping Captain Marvel get away with the gauntlet. It's like
they're playing a giant game of keep away
with the gauntlet, right? And yeah, it was cringy, but I mean, for a couple reasons. One, these women have never met each other, and yet they know how to work together. It's this weird kind of hive.
And two, why like team up based on gender?
Yeah, why would they team up based on
gender? So arbitrary.
Right? It was very arbitrary. And that's another one of those moments that I was talking about when I said there are parts of the movie where you can tell that it's not really what the Russos would have done if they had the freedom to do whatever they wanted. And that was something that was definitely coerced into the movie. But here's what I will say to that. I gave it some thought. First of all, yes, it's cringe. It's really cringe. And it is annoying, but it's not like it's not a really big part of the movie. And it here's
20 seconds in a 3-hour movie.
Yeah, it's not that big of a part of the movie. And I'll say one other thing, too. If we can is it possible, and this is something that I'm thinking about, is it possible that a moment like that would actually please female viewers because this is the kind of thing that they tend to gravitate towards? So, like, for example, there are no movies where a bunch of men get together in some similar or parallel moment because they are men. And that doesn't actually make men get excited or interested. Usually, men get excited or interested when they're watching a movie for the choices that characters make, for, you know, for different reasons. But maybe girls and women, maybe they tend to be attracted to girl power moments. Maybe they do tend to see experience media through the lens of gender, even if they're not feminists, by the way. But just like, maybe that's why. I don't know, because there are people that liked it, and they're mostly women that I've spoken to that thought it was cool because it was women, and they're not feminist women. They just thought it was cool. And I wonder if that isn't, maybe that's just something that women tend to like. And yeah, it does. It definitely, like I said, my eyes were rolling. Like they were way in the back, but I did not, I knew that was going to happen though. A part of me knew there would be a moment like that, because there was a moment like that in Infinity War. It was just on a smaller scale. It was like, Scarlet Witch and, yeah. Unfufu, whatever her name is, with the spear, and, there was another female, Black Widow, I think, right? And they're all fighting the alien chick too. It had to be a girl fight, you know? And that was, that was a moment that was like, okay, I guess. You know, these people don't know each other. They've never worked together before, except like Black Widow and Scarlet Witch have, you know. But this moment was like that on steroids, because it was like nobody knew each other, you know. But they knew that they had to sync up their brains and, you know, get this done. But it didn't kill the movie for me. It was just like it was a cringe moment. And in fact,
it didn't shit on the previous scene where it was everybody from the MCU all rolling in at once. Mm-hmm. That was the real showstopper right there.
Yeah.
I think that was really the best. And just to like kind of add on, I don't know if women really liked that, chick moment poses team because shit just got real or whatever. I think it's more like they're being told
that that's what they should like that. Yeah.
Like, you need to like this. This is all women. Look at all this women. You need to like this, or else why are you even a women?
Yeah, I think that there's a bit, it might be a mix of both. I think that there is, because look, Captain Marvel made $1 billion. And that movie, I mean, I know that part of the reason why is it's because it's in the MCU.
Well, just the timing. But, it was just the
movie, and the timing the MCU, too.
And they were hyping the shit out of it. Like, exactly. I don't think it would have done nearly as well if it came out a year.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like I said, I know people who have told me that women were cheering when the girl power moment showed up. Oh, and God. I mean, I think yes, it is gay. I think it's entirely possible. This is my wife in the back. I think it's entirely possible that maybe the way that women experience film media is a little bit different, in that they do tend to see it in the lens of gender more than men. And maybe that is part of it. But I also agree that it is in part because they're being told that that's what you're supposed to like. And I will say that it didn't make everyone happy. So I have this article here from The Slate, or just Slate, about that scene. It says the worst scene in Endgame is the one that's supposed to be the most feminist. The movie's girls rock moment is too little, too patronizing, and too late. Oddly enough, they have a photo of Black Widow, who wasn't at that moment because she was dead. And they complained about that scene because they thought it was too late. Okay. So this means that you can't make feminists happy. Stop trying. Stop it. Stop pandering. Task. You can't do it. You know, because even when you do it, and you do it, by the way, at the cost of everybody else possibly like losing vertebra from the cringe. So just don't do it for the sake of everyone else's health and so that you can avoid feminists complaining about your shit anyway. Just don't bother. It's not worth it. It doesn't add anything. It's like, you know, in the final battle, Captain Marvel shows up. She literally flies through Thanos' ship like it's a cloud. And it just goes down. Like, Captain Marvel doesn't tip the scales that much. But she definitely shows up specifically to remind us that she is going to be taking over. Yeah, she's in this movie. She shows up specifically to remind us that when this arc ends, it's going to be all about characters like her. So, you know, just remember that. Because otherwise, yeah, there's some girl power moments turn out to be some of the weakest ones, but fortunately, there aren't that many of them. So
last thought on that scene right there. Mm-hmm. I got a comic idea to pitch to you, Brian.
Okay.
So first panel is all the women, you know, running to Spider-Man's aid, and draw them like as sexualized as humanly possible. Okay. And then on the second panel, this cuts back to Spider-Man, who is now covering his crotch with the Infinity Gauntlet. Just if you have a minute.
Okay. You write that down because I have a backlog of things that I'm working on, but I think that could be funny. Okay, so next super chat, Mr. Roboto gives us $2 and says, Tony Stark sent a beacon. I think he meant to say beacon. He spelt it as beckon. Yeah, I remember that. It's possible. But I don't know, like, if Carol had any sort of device that would pick that up. But, okay. I mean, whatever. Like I said, I don't really care about that much. Mr. Roboto gives us another $2 and says, Hawkeye is not disposable. Black Widow, maybe. No, I think Black Widow is actually a little bit more developed than Hawkeye is. They did develop him more in Age of Ultron, where they gave them the family and whatnot, but they're pretty well-developed characters considering they don't have their own movies. I'll put it that way. So I'd like them. I think they're both good characters. I like Scarlet Witch too. I think they made her a little bit OP, but not nearly as bad as fucking Captain Marvel. So, all right. So anyway, let's talk a little bit about the main Avengers in this movie. So Hulk,
Mark Ruffalo Hulk?
Yes, Mark Ruffalo Hulk. That's right. So in this movie, the Hulk is not the Hulk as he has been. But to be fair, the Hulk's been evolving a lot in the movies. If you notice that, and I'm not including the Edward Norton Hulk, although I don't mind that Hulk. I just don't think it's consistent. The Hulk in the first Avengers as well as the second Avengers is pretty much the Hulk that everyone knows. He's just like the savage that just wrecks shit. I think it was in Thor Ragnarok, the Hulk is like able to talk, but he's still the Hulk mostly. But I like that version a lot. He's a little bit more, less of an animal savage that's like all id. He's more like, you know, a little bit more like a child, I guess you could say.
Yeah, he's just a big out of control kid.
Yeah, he's like a big super strong child. But I like that because that kind of is what the Hulk is. In this movie, the Hulk is he's basically a blend. So essentially he's like there was a period in the comics where the Hulk.
I'm glad you're going to bring this up.
There was a period in the comics a couple of times, because they've always been changing the Hulk around here and there, where he has been able to talk and he wears clothes, like regular clothes, they're not ripped up or anything. And he's more or less like he's not as strong as he can be when he's like all the way savage, but he's clearly like super strong. This is more along the lines of that. Some people call it, but there's like a character named Professor Hulk, which is. Yeah, what they're referring to.
Professor.
Yeah. I was thinking more like before that there was like way back, you know, early on, there was a Hulk that talked like Bruce Banner. He was just like a big monster too. So they've done this multiple times. So basically what you're looking at is that. Hulk. Yeah. Before the Gray Hulk even. But yes, like even the Gray Hulk was like that, although he was a bit more, his personality was different than Banner's was. So it was clearly like two different people. But yeah, so they basically did that. And I honestly, I didn't mind that. I didn't mind that. Well, what do you think?
It was okay. It took a little getting used to, and just I kept looking at it, and just it was very weird.
It was
look at,
because it was like Mark Ruffalo's face. I think it was a way for them to kind of like, I think it was a way for them to kind of tone the Hulk down a bit so that he wasn't going to be as much of a game changer, because he wasn't as strong. He's kind of like how She-Hulk was in the comics, mm-hmm. where, you know, she was basically, she is the human version in mind, but she has the Hulk-like body, but she's not as strong. So they did that. I didn't mind it. I thought I was okay with it. I thought it was a little bit, I don't want to say emasculating, because it makes it sound like it's specifically because he's male. I don't think that's the reason, although there's another character I will get to that I think that is the reason. But I think that it was just so that they could try something new with the character and make him useful still without being too useful. So, yeah, we can call him Ruffle Hulk or Hulk Ruffalo or whatever, but it was fine. Although he dates himself by dabbing, which he should not have done.
That and the Fortnite scene.
oh, my God.
Yeah. I would rather have two more girl power moments than both of those.
yes. Okay, so speaking of Fortnite, Thor. So let's talk about this real quick. There was this article written by The Guardian called "Avengers Endgame was brilliant, but the fat shaming broke my heart." So one of the things that really bugged me about this movie is how they handled Thor. And I've been annoyed with how they've handled the Thor character since Ragnarok. Even though I did like Thor Ragnarok, I don't like how Thor was treated in some ways in Ragnarok. And in particular, I don't like how he's handled in this movie because, and this is the reason, it doesn't seem consistent with how the character has changed, how Thor has actually, his arc has evolved him. I don't like how this ended. So, or where they landed with him. So I guess I'll explain what happens. So when they find Thor 5 years later, they have this plan to go and undo what Thanos has done. And they go to New Asgard, which apparently is made up of 1/4 of the Asgardians that were left at the end of Thor Ragnarok / the beginning of Infinity War, because Thanos comes, he finds their ship at the end of Ragnarok. In the beginning of Infinity War, we can only assume that he wiped out half of the Asgardians on the ship and then let the rest of them live, and they must have found their way to Earth in some way. I'm sure I'm fine with that. But then when he snapped his fingers, he must have wiped out half of them again. So there was only 1/4 of the Asgardians left that were left after Ragnarok, by the way. So not a lot of Asgardians left. But so he's the king of what's left of the Asgardians. And he spends all of his time, 5 years, drinking, eating whatever he wants, putting on a bunch of weight, and playing Fortnite, not kidding, with Meek and Korg, who was the rock guy and the little slug-like creature from Ragnarok that he befriended in the movie. And it was nice to see those characters, by the way, because I like them. They're funny. But what I guess I didn't like was that this is what Thor does, and I get that, you know, He had the hardest time of this. He ends up losing more than everyone else, in my opinion.
And it's a slow, drawn out process too. It doesn't just lose everything at once.
No,
it's just loss after loss after loss for the.
Yes, he lost. I mean, he loses his brother multiple times. He loses his mother in the Dark World. He loses his father in Ragnarok. He loses his sister. He loses Asgard. He loses Asgardians. He loses his girlfriend.
He loses his brother then for real. Yeah,
then he loses his brother for real. Then he loses his best friend. And he lost his hammer. And he had to go and try to get a new weapon made, and he tries to use it to stop Thanos, and he fails at that. Everyone
and half
dies.
Of his other friends.
Yes.
Get destroyed.
Yes. So he's lost more than anyone else, easily. I mean, he has lost stuff that would have driven a normal man insane. He just happens to be a god. But he lost just about everything that there was that you could have lost, okay? And the entire – he ends up being this fat slob. And it's played for a joke. And at first, I found it funny too, right? I thought it was funny. But it loses its charm very quickly once you really start thinking about how much has been lost and how the film is treating him, because he's the butt of the joke. For like, they constantly make it a joke for the rest of the film. And it's like, but this guy's lost so much. This guy's lost everything, just about. And then, you know, it's just the way that they treat it. It's like, and then of course, what the Guardian does, they focus on the fat shaming. It's like, yeah, that was played for a joke, but don't you see that what's happening here is they're taking, I think, this is my opinion, but they're taking the person that is essentially like one of, if not the most masculine character, that is his whole arc is built on growing into a wise king, which is what Odin has been readying him for from the very first movie. So if you watch I watched the original Thor last night just so I can remind myself like what it was, the trajectory of this character arc is going. And consistently throughout the first three, all three of the Thor movies, all of it is guiding him towards learning to be a wise king that has to bear a heavy burden of essentially being responsible for his people. He learns selflessness and humility and all this stuff. In the first movie, he learns this stuff. That's how he becomes worthy. That's the whole point of the first movie. And in this movie, they make all of that a joke. And not only that, but in order for him to find his real path, he ends up having a conversation with his mother, who actually gives him conflicting wisdom, like contradictory. So Odin is preparing Thor to be king, essentially setting him up for a life of what does it mean to be king? When Thor is a kid, he believes that it's about power and it's about making your enemies fear you so that they don't fuck with your kingdom, and that's the best way to protect your people. What Odin teaches him is, throughout the films, is that he, Odin himself, made that mistake. He doesn't want his kids to make the same mistake, especially any of his kids that might become king. And so he teaches them to be wise kings as opposed to tyrants, right? And that being a king comes with a heavy burden and responsibility. Responsibility is a very, I don't want to say it's uniquely masculine, but I think it is something that is in the realm of what we think of when we think of something that is masculine. It is to be not just in charge, but to be responsible or accountable for people that are weaker than you, in which case we know that Thor is, there are Asgardians weaker than him. So he is responsible for those people. That's what being a wise king is all about. But when he talks to his mother, she says, she contradicts her husband. She contradicts his father by saying, maybe instead of doing what you think you should do, maybe you should, or maybe instead of being, trying to become what you think you should try to become whatever you are, essentially just do you. And so it's antithetical to the arc of the character. And so he ends up going against, not only does he become a fat slob that they make fun of, and he's also really stupid in this movie for some reason. And again, if you watch the old movies, he's not dumb. You know, they just play him up that way. And I think they've been doing that ever since Civil War, when they did this little sketch where Thor was hanging out with that guy, Daryl, and it was like this little funny little sketch thing. They decided to play up that sort of facet of the character to make him more fun, and I get that, but they make him a little bit too dumb and almost useless, and so he moves away from all that. And even at the end of the movie, he gives up his kingdom to Valkyrie, and that brings me into something else, which is the passing of the torch shit that really, you know, upsets me.
Most of the passing of the torch stuff, I was like neutral to meh about all of it. But then when he gives her like he hands the reins over to Valkyrie, that just, it came out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And I only think they did that. I only think they did that just so they can have Thor pal around with the Guardians and Guardians.
Yeah, but I don't know if I like that either. I mean, the Guardians, if Thor with the Guardians is, it's kind of broken, isn't it? Like, are they going to nerf him? Because the Guardians are all basically like people without powers, except for Groot. And even then it's like, it's just a tree. This guy's the God of Thunder. It doesn't, it's not like it's a good fit, but I get it. Like, they have good chemistry and it's fun, but I don't know. I think that might be the reason, but I also believe that they're going to give Valkyrie is either going to get her own movie or we're going to see more of her in other movies. And I think that they're setting her up.
That's a foregone conclusion.
Yeah. They're not just doing that, but you know, like, I mean, we're at 5 o'clock. We got to wrap up, but we'll continue the conversation in the after show. But okay, so all in all, again, I would say, and this is something that Lindsay said, she'll say that she said it first, but I agree with her, 80% of the movie is fantastic. Like the moment that you get to they're fighting Thanos and it's like a fucking throwdown, it's the shit. And when Thanos' army shows up and then all the portals start opening and Doctor Strange sends in, I mean, not just every hero, but fucking everybody, every Asgardian that's left, every, you know, that was, what was it, like Wakandans were there, the Asgardians were there, the fucking...
All the summoners and shit.
Yeah, all the other wizards were there, or the sorcerers, everybody was there. It was just, that was the shit. Like, that was it's worth the price of the film alone is the battles at the end. Absolutely. And all the time travel stuff was where they revisit the old movies. There is a lot of good stuff. I would say it's mostly perfect, except for the girl power moments. Some of the way that they treated Thor, I wasn't a fan of. And the passing of the torch stuff at the end, I mean, it kind of makes the epilogue go a little bit too long. But otherwise, it is a very good movie. And I will tell you that Phase 3, which is what we're in right now, has one more movie left in it, and that's Spider-Man Far From Home. I'm going to watch that, and then I'm done with the MCU. And I've been saying this for months, but I would say that if you see how this movie ends and you think, well, where are they going to go from here, I'm pretty sure you can put it together, and it's I doubt that it's going to be great. So I'm done after Spider-Man, but I'll keep my mind open in case something else is exciting. What about you?
I'm basically right there too. I do like the last few Spider-Man movies, so I'm going to give that a check out.
Yeah.
I'm really up in the air on Guardians 3. It could be.
I'm with that.
But after that, I think I'm.
Yeah, kind of
done.
I like James Gunn's movies. I wanted Guardians 3 when I thought that it was going to introduce us to Adam Warlock, because that was what Guardians 2 left us on. But now that Thanos is gone and that's over, I have no idea what they could possibly build up to. And I know people might say Galactus, and I think that could be cool, but Thanos is a bigger threat than Galactus. Thanos with the Infinity Gauntlet, it doesn't get more threatening than that. Like, they'd have to really find a way to make that, to raise the stakes, and I just don't see it. So I'm open to it, but I suspect that for now, I'm going to be done after Spider-Man, and if Guardians 3 looks really great, I'll check it out. Besides that, I'd like to see them handle X-Men and the Fantastic Four well, because I know that they got the rights to those things. I don't know. I'd love to see a good Fantastic Four movie, but I don't know if they'll be able to pull that off. So anyway, we're going to go into the after show. If you guys want to be a part of the after show, what you got to do is you got to go to feedthebadger.com, start a monthly subscription. You can give as little as you feel like you're able to. You can get into the after show for the Nerdcast no matter what level you're at, because it's just available to everybody. So, you know, consider that. We're going to keep talking about the movie in the after show. I want to thank you guys for joining us on this week's Nerdcast. I want to thank you, Mike J, for hanging out and talking. I hope I didn't talk your ear off too much. I just have so much to say about this movie, and I still have shit on my mind, but yeah, I'll continue talking with you guys in the after show. Thanks for coming on. Be sure to hit like, subscribe, hit the bell for notifications, comment, and yeah, we'll talk to you guys in the next one. Thanks for coming on, and we'll see you guys Friday. I have a very special guest on Friday. All right, talk to you later.